Welcome you back. Sports Talk Tuesday action rolling along here on Sports Talk. Lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Take a peek to the north, the Emerald City. See what's going down with the Seahawks. Maybe a little UW. And who better than the Husky alum, the fine sports journalist for ESPN 710 in Seattle. Online, 710sports.com. On Twitter, the handle at thebgustafson.com. Brandon Gustafson checks in. BG, happy 2022. How are things with you?
Oh, doing great. Been, you know, got the yearly snowfall here. Over the last week or so after Christmas, so just kind of been hunkering down. But, no, I've been having a good time. Looking forward to seeing the Seahawks season wrap up and then get rolling on what's next.
You know, of course, your pup, your retriever, Maverick, you talked about the snow. So did he lose his mind playing in the snow, or was he a little hesitant at first?
Oh, man, he was going nuts. First time he saw it, and it was funny. He, you know, he obviously being a Golden, he loves to fetch. He loves nothing more than doing that. But he'd get his tennis ball, he'd go find the biggest pile of snow he could, plop it right in and bury it, and then dig it right back up and just rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat. So kind of took care of himself there. It was pretty fun.
That's awesome. So a couple general questions about UW. With the hopes entering the season, then the Montana game, then Coach Lake has to fire his offensive coordinator, then he gets dismissed, a lot of frustration. But now, so after the hiring of Kalen DeBoer, big year at Fresno State, from you, the alum you hear from, the fans, what's the buzz about this hire?
Yeah, I mean, I personally like it. I think that basically everywhere Kalen DeBoer's been, his offenses have produced, and for the most part, his teams have won. And that's something that after the 2 years with Jimmy Lake running the program with John Donovan, I mean, that just was not the case at all. I mean, I used to joke that John Donovan had a blindfold on and was throwing darts at the play sheet. I mean, it made no sense to me what he was trying to do. So really looking forward to what he can do. I know that some people weren't super thrilled with the hire just because it wasn't the big sexy name out there when you have guys like Lincoln Riley moving to USC and Matt Campbell over at Iowa State is always somebody whenever a big job opens up that his name's getting thrown in there. But I think it's just a quiet hire. He seems to kind of fit what this program really needs right now, just a guy who's really convicted in his ways, and he's bringing up basically his entire staff from Fresno State with a few new faces over here sprinkled in. So I'm looking forward to see what he can do, especially on the offensive side of the ball, just after 2 years where it just was not very fun to watch.
So earlier this week, we were talking about arch rivals, you know, the debate here, who's the nemesis? Is it the Beavers? Is it the Huskies? But among Washington football fans, I always say don't sell the in-state short. So we know on social media, we see a lot of Husky fans, a lot of venom towards Oregon. So when it comes to Washington State, would you say that they are the top rival? What gets Washington fans' blood boiling the most? The thought of playing Oregon or the Cougs?
Oh, it's Oregon, 100%. It's not close. And part of it is, I think, more recently, I mean, there was the long streak there where Oregon was winning year in and year out. But on the flip side, I mean, UW has dominated the Apple Cup both historically and in recent history. I mean, this year was the first time that Wazoo's won the Apple Cup since I was in high school.
Wow.
So just for a little context there, I mean, it's been a bit. So it's one of those things where beating Oregon means so much more to UW than beating Wazoo does. Beating Wazoo is one of those things where it's kind of like, yeah, you're taking care of your business. That's expected. But there's just something else about that Oregon-UW rivalry, man, and I know that people up here get real, real fired up about it, which is fun. I mean, that's what college football is all about, is those big-time rivalry games. And, you know, in recent years, it's been pretty fun. It's been more competitive for sure over the last few years. So hopefully that with two new head coaches, both at Oregon and up here at UW, they're able to kind of keep that going forward.
No, that's what I would have bet. But I wanted to make sure. But continue with Brandon Gustafson, ESPN 710 Seattle. So baseball, a hypothetical. We know the Mariners come off an out of nowhere, super exciting season, and fans are chomping at the bit for this year. They get Robbie Ray, the Cy Young Award winner. So if you just tapped into the fan in all of us, Brandon, how ticked off are we that it looks like they're not doing anything to solve this? Because this would be an awesome winter of hot stove baseball.
It's so frustrating, man. And from a Seattle-specific perspective, it's especially frustrating because, like, you have the Mariners on the rise, and they're so close to making the playoffs, right? They're so close to just ending that drought, and they're this young, exciting team, and they're on the rise and everything. Whereas the Seahawks, who have run this town for, you know, a decade, two decades, are on the decline and, you know, have a 6-10 record right now going into their last week. So everyone's jazzed about the Mariners. Everybody's looking forward to that. And then it all comes to a screeching halt because MLB cannot get out of its own way and cannot give the players what they need and deserve and these labor talks with this lockout. So it's really frustrating, and especially because just a day or two before this lockout hits, they go out and they make the big splash for Robbie Ray, the reigning AL Cy Young winner. So it's like, oh man, what's next? They're tied to Trevor Story. They're tied to Chris Bryant and a few other guys out on the market. And then it just comes to a screeching halt. And unfortunately, we're just not really hearing a lot about these two sides even talking at all or budging on anything. So I'm really hoping that as we inch closer and closer to what would be typical report dates, that we'll start hearing a little bit more. But it being this quiet already a few days into the new year is definitely a little concerning.
Yeah, Rob Manfred should not be looking for my Christmas card. It's not delayed. It ain't coming.
Yeah, he's not on my list either, that's for sure.
You know, the retirement of Kyle Seager absolutely has to be discussed. I mean, you look at the Mariner record book, obviously it's going to be Edgar, Ichiro, Griffey in a ton of categories. But after that, there's a lot of Seager. I mean, I did the math. The guy started for 10 years. He was injured in 2019. But Brandon, in the other 9 years, he only missed 35 total games. You've watched his whole career. Just some thoughts of, you know, what kind of great Mariner he's been and what they lose with his departure.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of hit it on the head right there. Durability and availability, I mean, that's one of the biggest things in sports, and especially we're talking about baseball. I mean, 162-game season and just how long that takes a lot out of you. And, I mean, you have guys that are just sitting out for, you know, they got sore thumb or they just need to get off their feet for a little bit. That was not Kyle Seager at all. I mean, for just years and years and years, regardless of who his teammates were in the order surrounding him, who the manager was, who the other coaches were. I mean, you knew that you were penciling in Kyle Seager hitting somewhere between that 3-5 spot in the lineup and that he was going to be playing third base for you. And the production, obviously, was pretty impressive this last year when you're looking at the power numbers, setting career highs in home runs and RBIs and all that. So it's a huge loss, and he's somebody that was kind of that heartbeat there in the clubhouse. They have some other guys like that still going forward, like Mitch Haniger and J.P. Crawford on the hitting side and Marco Gonzalez when it comes to the pitchers. But that was a guy when you listen to these players after the season talk about them just missing out on the playoffs, the one guy they all talked about was Kyle Seager. Like, we wanted to do this for Kyle Seager so bad, and that speaks volumes. So it's going to be a very different looking over at third base this next year and years to come, and not seeing number 15 out there, but I know that sooner rather than later he'll be inducted into the Mariners Hall of Fame, and rightfully so. I mean, he was, I think I've talked to you about it before. I mean, he and Felix Hernandez for about 15 years were the only two reasons why you should watch Mariner baseball. You knew what you're going to get out of those two guys. So it was a little surprising to see him walk away outright, but having his wife send it out on Twitter, which he's not on, he's not a social media guy, he's a quiet dude, I thought was pretty fitting.
As far as the Seahawks, you know, when we talked last summer, neither of us bought for one second that Russell Wilson was going anywhere. Now there's a lot of decisions to be made moving forward, and I get with a game left, it's all speculation. So same question from August of 2021 for January 2022. How realistic now do you think maybe number three is in a different uniform next season?
Yeah, it's that's the big storyline, and Russell didn't really shy away from that this last week. Everybody was kind of talking about how this last game here against the Lions, their home finale, whether that was going to be kind of a send-off of sorts, and he didn't really shy away from that. And it's kind of what he said all along of, I really hope that I'm still in a uniform, in a Seahawks uniform for years to come. But, you know, he's not 100%. And with such a disappointing season this year, both because of his injury and a few other factors and whatnot, I think that it is a little more feasible that there's at least some change. I know a lot of people immediately look at Pete Carroll, the head coach, and then general manager John Snyder as well. But those two guys, those guys are signed for the long haul, man. I mean, Pete signed through 2025. John signed through the 2027 draft. And Russ still has two more years on his contract up here. But, I mean, it's you can get quite the haul for him, especially when you traded out first-round picks for Jamal Adams. And that trade has worked out to a certain extent, but really hasn't lived up to the value that they sent off for him. So it's looking more and more likely. It's one of those things where until I get the official confirmation right from the team, they send out the press release like, yeah, we traded this guy, I'm not going to believe it. but it's one of those things where as we kind of get closer and closer to the offseason, it definitely seems a lot more feasible than it did this last offseason.
Yeah, I already told my sister, who still lives in Jersey, big Giants fans, I was like, I have twin nephews. I was like, they're both getting number 3 Giants jerseys if he lands there. So a couple final thoughts for Brandon Gustafson, ESPN 710 in Seattle. You know, you mentioned Jamal Adams, and it's worth kind of going back over because, you know, you look at the Seahawks during this great run, it hasn't been with high picks. They've never gone, since they drafted Russell, higher than 27th overall. Mm-hmm. Now I think they would be 7th. So when you look back at this, is that deal regrettable? Or my chair is, look, they thought they could win immediately. They made the deal. They won 12 games last year. I always say you got to roll the dice and try to win it.
Yeah, it's one of those things with Jamal Adams. Like, he's such a talented young guy, and just the energy that he brings and his personality. I mean, it fits a lot of what Pete Carroll wants out of his team, especially on the defensive side of the ball. He's such a spark plug. He's such a juice guy, and Pete just loves that about him, and I know that his teammates love that about him as well. But you're trading 2 first-round picks and a 3rd-round pick for a box safety. And then what's been so interesting about that trade, Steve, is that in the 2020 season, they were lining him up around the line of scrimmage. They were blitzing him a ton. I mean, the guy had almost 10 sacks in 12 games from the safety spot. It was never done like that before. He set an NFL record for sacks by a defensive back in a single season, and he missed 4 games. And then you go into this year, and it's like, oh, okay, how's he gonna one up that? Now he has 17 games. I mean, he was somebody we were thinking might get 12 sacks or something this year. And they're lining him up deep in coverage all the time. And I do think that he improved in coverage. And I think that some of the shots at him being this incredible liability in coverage are a little overstated. But that's not his strengths. They traded 2 first-round picks for this guy, and they're taking away what makes him special, which is his ability to wreak havoc at the line of scrimmage and in the run game and affect passers by rushing them. And it's just been so fascinating because this isn't the first time that something like that's happened when they've traded first-round picks. I mean, they traded first-round pick for Jimmy Graham and tried to make him a traditional tight end when he was basically just a big receiver.
Right.
And then they traded the first-round pick for Percy Harvin before the Super Bowl, and while that technically worked out as Percy contributed big in that game, but they probably would have won without him, right? And a little bit of a locker room issue. I mean, everybody knows about the Golden Tate thing where he punched him before picture day, before the Super Bowl, jeez, and things like that. So it's interesting, though, because on the flip side, they really haven't hit on many first-round picks. I mean, they drafted Russell Okung and Earl Thomas back in 2010, but that was 12 years ago. And other than that, they've really struggled with some of those early-round picks. So I totally get them going all in and trying to get a guy like Adams that fits. They gave up too much for him, and then they kind of took away what makes him great. But they signed him to the big deal, and he's going to be here for a long time unless they decide to pull the plug on that and try to get some value for him in the trade market. But I guess it's still a little too early to say whether that's a bad deal per se. But just this last season, kind of scratched my head with the usage that, of him, considering just how impactful he was the year prior.
And the last thing I want to get to, you know, last night it looked like Roethlisberger playing the last time at Heinz Field. The Seahawks just played their season finale at home. And I think it was Brock Heward who wrote on your site about Bobby Wagner. You know, the year they took Russ third, Bobby Wags went second. He turns 32 in June. I know he's under contract for next year. Is there any thought that the Hall of Famer might not be coming back? Is that a decision to be made?
It's a big decision. And one thing that would be working in Bobby's favor, aside from just, you know, the resume and that he's a leader on that team and super well-respected, is that even though cutting or trading him would save them, I think, $17 or $18 million against the cap, they're already going into this offseason in the top five or six in terms of available cap space. And that's with Russell Wilson making $30-plus million this upcoming season. So they're in a really good spot when it comes to the cap. But, yeah, Bobby's getting up there in age. He's still producing at a pretty high level. But the NFL, in terms of what's being asked of linebackers, is just a little different. And I think that we saw on Sunday that Jordan Brooks and Cody Barton just attacking the line of scrimmage a little more than Bobby's done these last few years and taking on blockers and shooting gaps. I think that that's just kind of the name of the game for a lot of these linebackers, and he's definitely lost a step naturally. I mean, he's been in the league for 10 years, so it's a realistic question, and I kind of agree with what Brock said on our site and on our station that I think it's more likely that Bobby played his last home game for the Seahawks than Russell Wilson. And like I said, there's a legitimate shot that Russ is gone this offseason as well. So it would be a very strange thing, though, to see both Bobby Wagner and Russell Wilson not on this team next year. But if you're going to ask me one of those two who's more likely, I'd definitely be saying it'd be Bobby Wagner, just because it's a little bit easier to get rid of him and save that money and whatnot.
Wow. A lot to think about during the offseason. Folks, he's Brandon Gustafson, does terrific work, wires us in from Seattle online. Visit 710sports.com. On Twitter, use at thebgustafson.com. Brandon, always appreciate the time. Give Mav my very best, and we look forward to talking again not too far down the road.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, Steve. Take care.